1-800-919.
Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the deadly and the destructive myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, with military and economic schemes. Not very often. We have to also expose the myths associated with sports, but we'll be doing that again this morning. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help you understand what is occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with him. Our number, if you'd like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said on this program, or if you just have a question that is burning within, please give us a call toll free, 877-376-45. Yesterday, sober retreat from the world, the one way you can escape the kind of the overall drone of bad news around the world is through sports. And yesterday, sports became a cause célèb for the political correct crowd. A basketball player, fairly average player, at the end of his career, wrote a story, he himself wrote the story for Sports Illustrated, and it was released yesterday, where he said, "I'm gay and wanted to become the Jackie Robinson of homosexuality," where he was claiming that he's the first, and it takes, I think, 11 or 12 words to explain what he's first at. But he's the first openly homosexual male athlete in a major U.S. sport to announce that he is gay while still actively playing. It is a... I just have to shake my head. There's two aspects of this story that bothered me a great deal. The first is, he's a basketball player. You know, if you're playing a sport... Yeah, I don't care if you're playing baseball or football or basketball or hockey. The only reason that you're paid to play that sport is that you're good at that sport and that fans find your play and your team entertaining. I mean, that's it. It is for entertainment value only. To think that your sexual preference off the court is somehow germane to the equation of entertainment, it is just absurd. I mean, this isn't Jackie Robinson, where we had a nation of racists who determined that someone could or couldn't play a game because of their skin color. And Branch Rickey chose Jackie Robinson because of his not only ability, but his strength of character to break the color barrier in baseball. That was extraordinary. He was extraordinary. This is pathetic. The second thing that bothers me about it is how many people immediately took the politically correct position, saying, "Oh, great courage, great character. Such a wonderful thing for him to do, a great role model for children." Not a person said, "No, wait a minute. You know, his sexual preference, apart from his sport, is absolutely, totally, and completely irrelevant." No one said, "Hey, you know, homosexuality is abnormal. We ought not be promoting it as normal." By definition, you got one guy making this declaration, and in American sports, well, you know, take baseball, 25 guys on a team, 30 teams, 750 players. Not one. At least we're not one that thinks that it is our business to know his business. Football, 32 teams, but 50 some odd players per team. You know, it's at the very highest possible numbers, homosexuality is approximately 1 to 2% of our society. It's abnormal. Now, abnormal is not a pejorative, just a statement of fact. And, you know, if you want to be homosexual, that's fine. That's your choice. Just don't make your choice a cause célèbre. You know, that's the thing that was so irritating about the news yesterday, is that the labeling of those who don't approve as they were homophobes, afraid of homosexuals, homophobe, to be afraid. And the last thing that somebody who is speaking out against that kind of an announcement is afraid, because society as a whole now has been so conditioned, so indoctrinated, is so politically correct that everyone is afraid actually to say anything but, oh boy, isn't it wonderful. You know, so you have presidents weighing in, the current one and the former one. Now, why? To tell somebody that it was good to say, you know, my sexuality is relevant to me having been a basketball player? When we exist within a society where the thought process is monochromatic, where there is only one position that is articulated, and when that position is odd, peculiar, weird, out of sync with what would be considered appropriate and moral, when that is the only opinion that is stated, there is something seriously wrong with society. It says that the participants in that society are no longer thinking. They may have free will, but they're not using it. They may have a conscience, but it's decayed. It's very much like the response to the Boston bombing, where universally people are distancing the bombers from Islam. It's all about radicalization. It's all about extremism, because those in control of our society, those doing the indoctrination, want the enemy to be extremist, because if the enemy is extremist, then anyone who opposes them, anyone who doesn't swallow the Kool-Aid, anyone who isn't willing to go along giddily with politics and patriotism and religion, they're ostracized. They can be marginalized. They can be attacked as the enemy. But what happens in that kind of a society? No one thinks anymore. And if you're not willing to be judgmental, then you've lost the ability to be moral, to be civil, to be rational. It's the basis of thinking. It's exercising good judgment. Now, before we move on to the next topic, just underscore this again. God really does not care. Absolutely does not care what you do in your own bedroom. It's irrelevant to him. He does not know Mr. Collins. Mr. Collins does not know him. In fact, one of the radio shows yesterday was saying that Collins is speaking out because God made him this way. The two or three times that God actually mentions homosexuality, the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms is this enormous swath of information, and it's mentioned two or three times. The two or three times it's mentioned, God says, not a good thing. Ought not be doing it. So God most certainly didn't make him that way. That's a statement that demeans God, miscasts God. There's very few things you can do that are worse than that. But God really doesn't care. He doesn't know Mr. Collins. Mr. Collins doesn't know him. He's not a participant in the covenant. God doesn't care. Doesn't see it. Doesn't want to know it. Doesn't care. You know, we've been in the second half of the show, we're going to return to the 10 statements that he etched in stone. Homosexuality didn't make the top 10 list. Not there. Adultery did. And so we ought to be concerned about what adultery does to us relative to our participation in the covenant. But homosexuality is an extraordinarily small issue with God. Now, it could be that it didn't make the top 10 list because it's so uncommon. 1-2% of society. Could also be that it didn't make the top 10 list because those who define themselves, as Mr. Collins is doing, by this aspect of their nature, have defined themselves at odds with God. Now, once again, free will. Don't care what somebody chooses to do in their own bedroom. Do not care. I've run a lot of very large businesses in my day, built them and hired hundreds and thousands of people for these businesses, and many times knowingly, openly gay people applied for jobs and I hired them. And in many cases, those who were homosexual became some of my closest friends. You know, so long as they're not promoting their bedroom behavior and making it a cause celeb within the business, then my view is you value people based upon the contribution that they are making either to your business or to the world as a whole or to their families. And with Mr. Collins, I wish he had taken that same approach. Over the weekend, we learned that the Russians didn't just tell us that Tamerlane was a ticking time bomb. They told us his mother was, too. You see, the Russians had become so concerned about the wicked witch that is Mommy Shanarev. And if you've heard her, in fact, anyone listening to this program has heard her because we played her testimony of Allahu Akbar and how she wants to join her son in Allah's brothel by being killed while committing an act of jihad. And that he was killed because he was a Muslim as opposed to he killed because he was a Muslim. Well, the Russians wiretapped a communication between Mommy Shanarev and Tamerlane, her son. Guess what they talked about? Jihad. So the Russians had an actual conversation recorded between the two back in 2011 when they told the United States, you know, you ought to go in and interview both of them, not just the one of them. And what did the FBI? The FBI finally admitted, yeah, we did interview Tamerlane. They only admitted it once one of the relatives says, yeah, they've been on his case for the whole time. But did they never come out and say they interviewed the mother? Well, they did. Because it was the mother who they were most concerned about. If the FBI, the judicial system, our politicians, wants to know who motivated these boys to become fundamentalist Muslims, they don't have to look very far. They came out of the womb that way. Welcome back to Shattering Us. I'm your host, Yadi. You can join in this conversation, 877-300-7645. I've mentioned this briefly, but I wanted to get the quote to you and the response to you because it is another sign of that. Collectively, we've lost our marbles. Those who are hired to work in the judicial branch of countries have lost the ability to be judgmental. They literally, we have an entire society that can't think. It's very much why you had the FBI conduct an interview of both of these, both mom and sons. Of the Boston bombing, and why you had the CIA also notified, the CIA putting them on a watch list, and yet no one could process the information that they were in Boston. They were just interviewed as potential jihadists, and the FBI had to put out the CIA the footage for other people to recognize them. They couldn't even recognize them, which speaks of a lack of discernment, of judgment. And a lot of this is because the last two administrations, both King George II and Barack Hussein Obama, have required all government judicial publications to remove Islam from their training tools so that they can write about radicalism, but they can't say Islamist extremism. They can say extremism, but they can't add Muslim or Islam in any place to it. So the fact that they were fundamentalist Muslims, they were talking about Islam, they were incapable of making the connection between Islam and terrorism, that even though Muslims perpetrate 99% of terrorist acts today. Those who are in the judicial branches can't think and make that connection. That's just a complete lack of exercising judgment. So here's the story. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police said that the two men who were planning to bomb the train were not Canadian citizens, but they were supported by, quote, Al-Qaeda elements in Iran, end quote. Then, quote, when I speak about supported, I mean direction and guidance, he said, end quote. Despite the allegations to Al-Qaeda in Iran, there is no evidence to suggest the planned attacks were state-sponsored, Miliza said, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer. You know, when you make statements that are that stupid, it resonates out the world that the intelligence community in the world today, the judicial arms of government, are moronic. You know, this was the double whammy. Al-Qaeda does not exist in Iran. Iran does not use Al-Qaeda. There is no connection between Iran and Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is a Sunni terrorist organization. Now, Al-Qaeda, for the most part, doesn't even exist anymore. What little there was of Al-Qaeda was created by the United States back in the Jimmy Carter administration when Zbigniew Brzezinski came up with the stupid idea that the enemy of our enemy was our friend, the Shenzhou concept, and we sent Al-Qaeda and the Taliban through Pakistan, which controlled them, $5 billion with American weaponry so that they could attack the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan, creating a civil war that killed 1.5 million Afghanis. Oh, by the way, Jimmy Carter boycotted the Moscow Olympics because of the Russian-sponsored, he said, civil war in Afghanistan when he himself started the civil war in Afghanistan. So you have an organization, for all practical purposes, doesn't even exist anymore. And we know for certain that while bin Laden was alive, that he had no influence on anyone outside of his little compound. His letters, when he sent them out via couriers, people laughed at him. You could, when you read his letters and the response to them, it was obvious that no one paid him any attention whatsoever. It was Al-Qaeda is meaningless. So Al-Qaeda can't be providing direction and guidance. Second of all, there is no Al-Qaeda presence in Iran. Iran is resolutely Shia. Al-Qaeda was Sunni. If you don't understand the basics, why would you make a statement? So to say this is somebody who's trying to explain the motivation for a terrorist attack, couldn't say that the motivation was Islam, so he came up with this stupid idea that, well, the two bad guys that everybody hates, I could use them. I can say Iran and Al-Qaeda. But then he says that it wasn't state-sponsored. Well, in Iran, if you are linked to a terrorist organization in Iran, it's Hezbollah. And Hezbollah is state-sponsored. So even if he'd gotten the name of the Islamic terrorist organization in Iran right, you can't say Hezbollah and exclude state sponsorship. It is just moronic. The Iranian foreign minister, Ali Akbar Shalehi, said that to suggest a link between Al-Qaeda and Iran was, and I quote, ridiculous. Quote, this is the most hilarious thing I've heard in my 64 years. It's ridiculous to link Al-Qaeda to Iran. We'll conclude his quote when Shattering Mist returns in a moment. To Shattering Mist, this is the statement. Now, it's not very often that I'm going to agree with a statement that is made by a government official in Iran, but in this particular case, there's really no other option but to agree. When the Canadian Royal Mounted Police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, I think is the right order of that, said that that their sting operation had netted two would-be Muslim bombers of a train. They said that they were inspired by Al-Qaeda in Iran. And this is how the Iranians responded. It is really ridiculous to link Al-Qaeda to Iran. I hope the Canadian authorities think a bit more rationally and pay attention to the consciousness of the people and world public opinion. Al-Qaeda is a Salafist Islamic movement. It there is absolutely no correlation between a fundamentalist Sunni movement and a Shia terrorist organization, except that they are enemies of one another. I mean, if you look at Iraq now, you have Sunni militants, all who were armed by the United States, fighting and killing on a daily basis Shia militants whom the United States armed. Shias and Sunnis kill each other for sport. It's what Yahweh meant when he spoke of Ishmael's descendants and saying, not only will they be wild asses of men, but their hands will be raised against their brother, and their brother's hands will be raised against them. You ought not pretend to have answers if you are that confused, Canada. It is just stunning. I mean, it's to think that we are in a world that is so indoctrinated that here these guys, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, conduct a sting operation, very much like the United States sting operations on Islamic terrorism, where they're literally posing as the inspiration for the terrorist. They lure the terrorist into the plot. They provide the inspiration for the terrorist. They encourage the terrorist. They provide the bomb materials for the terrorist, and then they see if the terrorist is going to the Muslim is going to deploy them. None of them ought to stand up in court. And here's the Canadians conducting this sting operation as Al-Qaeda in Iran. And because they posed as Al-Qaeda in Iran, which doesn't exist, now they're saying that this was motivated by Al-Qaeda in Iran. It was a sting operation. You know, Muslims are prone to jihad. That's what their Quran orders them to do. And so they're running sting operations to arrest those who are practicing their religion as it was conceived by Muhammad, and then blaming it on anything but Islam. During the time that, in fact, the very day that that the Boston bombers were yet unknown, but their identity, the fact they were Muslims, was resolutely obvious. A car bomb exploded outside the French embassy in the Libyan capital of Tripoli. Well, we sure made a mess there. In fact, today in Tripoli, you have militants surrounding the Department of Justice, demanding that their fellow militants are let out of jail. Well, the Libyan embassy and the French Libyan embassy was attacked with a bomb, very similar to the one that went off in Boston, placed on the sidewalk, very similar kind of device, and yet no one made the connection between the two. Speaking of Muslims acting badly, a senior Israeli military official has said that the Syrian forces have used chemical weapons against rebels many times. Brigadier General Brune has said military intelligence believed that the nerve gas sarin had been used in a number of incidents. Syria's government and rebels have accused each other of using chemical weapons. A UN team is trying to enter Syria to investigate, but they can't go in because there is no side to ally with. If they go in and work undercover with the rebels, they'll be killed by the rebels, kidnapped, ransomed, killed by the rebels. If they go in on behalf of the Damascus regime, they, too, will be incarcerated by them. The U.S. has said it would not tolerate the use of chemical weapons in Syria. So I thought it was really interesting that when the Israelis, who have the only viable intelligence organization in the world with the Mossad, says, to the best of our professional understanding, the regime has made use of deadly chemical weapons against the rebels in a number of incidences in the past, and that they showed photographs, close-up photographs of individuals foaming at the mouth with constricted pupils and other specific symptoms which provide evidence that deadly chemical weapons have been used. And these images were taken by the Mossad, provided to the world as a serious breach of what is considered appropriate even in the civil war. Which chemical weapons, again, the Israelis said primarily sarin gas, because it is the sarin is a chemical that causes the kinds of symptoms that were witnessed. Now, what's interesting here is that the United States, this was Obama, says, you know, if chemical weapons or biological weapons are used, that would be a red line for us, and we would have an entirely different approach to Syria. We would not tolerate the use of chemical and biological weapons. And when he made the comment, you know, it reminded me of when my wife, when our sons would do something kind of irritating, and she would, you know, say, you know, if you do that again, you know, we're going to send you to boarding school. You know, the old, send you to boarding school. And I kept on telling her, says, don't do that. Don't say that. You're not going to send them to boarding school if they, you know, don't tie their shoelaces again. I mean, you're just not going to do that. So don't threaten something you're not going to do, because what it does is it destroys your credibility when you do that. I mean, I understand your frustration. You want to make your point. But do it in such a way that you don't have to draw a red line and say, if you do this again, this will be the consequence. And when the President of the United States said that if they use chemical or biological weapons, that will be our red line, you just say, oh, come on. And what were you going to do? It was exactly like the invasion of Iraq back, what was it now, almost 12 years ago. When the President of the United States were claiming that they had chemical and biological weapons and that was the justification for invading Iraq, I said to all who would listen, if that's the case, then the last thing you want to do is send American troops in and have them exposed to chemical and biological weapons. That is grotesquely inappropriate. To send American troops in so that they're exposed to these gases. Yes, we have gas masks. However, you can't have a soldier wearing that kind of suit and 120-degree temperature and not bake alive. And they're not 100% foolproof. So if he has them, then he's going to deploy them on an invading force, and you ought not send Americans in to die. And if he doesn't have them, then you have no justification for invading. There is, you ought not go. There is no circumstance where that makes any sense. Well, here we are again. The president drew his red line in the sand. Said, if you cross this line, oh boy, we're going to respond. They cross the line, and what does the president do? Well, you know, to some degree, we have various confidence. Maybe it was used against the rebels, but you know, it was kind of small scale, and yeah, it would be a red line, but giving the stakes involved. And what we've heard from our own recent experiences and, you know, our past intelligence assessments alone were not sufficient. And so we need to make sure that the facts are credible and they're corroborated and that the degree of certainty will guide our decision making. That's what he said. That's what Chuck Hagel, U.S. Secretary of Defense, said. Paraphrasing, but those are his word choices. Wallowing all over himself. That's why you don't make declarative statements unless you are in a position to respond. And the United States is not a position to respond. There is no good side here. We can't engage in this war. There is nothing that will be gained. We could fly, do a no-fly zone. It wouldn't help a bit. We could try to put an embargo, wouldn't help a bit, because then we'd be embargoing against the Russians and the Chinese, whom we can't afford to upset this way because they own us. There is nothing that can be done. And when there's nothing that can be done, you don't go off and do something stupid. McCain, of course, never found a war he didn't like. wanted swift action. McCain, who has long called for more involvement in Syria, voiced concern that the administration would use caveats to avoid acting upon the new intelligence. He said that American enemies are paying very close attention as to whether U.S. follows through, as the White House signaled it would, to see more proof before responding to the new information. Quote, I worry that the president and the administration will use all of these caveats as an excuse not to act right away or at all, McCain told Fox News. The president clearly stated that it was a red line that couldn't be crossed without the United States taking vigorous action. Okay there, John. And I know John McCain. I've had him in my home. I've been in his office. Spent a fair amount of time with John. Had him in my airplane. We know each other reasonably well. This is stupid, McCain. Your decision to aid the rebels in Libya was stupid. Your decision to side with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt was stupid. Your decision to arm the rebels in Syria was stupid. And your desire to get the United States engaged in a in the war in Syria is suicidal. Just as was your support of the invasion of Afghanistan, the continuation of Afghanistan, and the invasion of Iraq. You have consistently been wrong, and as a result of your errors, where 10,000 American lives have been sacrificed, and a million others. It's cost us $6 trillion, John, based upon your desire to fight another war. I understand that you don't like the way that Vietnam turned out, that we lost that war, the war that you were part of. And now you want to fight another war that maybe this time we're going to win, but I'm telling you, John, the outcome of engaging in this war is vastly worse than Vietnam. Stand down, John. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Speaking of myths, this notion that that America accomplished something worthwhile by squandering $6 trillion and a million lives in Iraq has been torn asunder even more egregiously recently. Virtually every day over the last 2 weeks, there have been massive bombings in Iraq. 26 people were killed in the bombing that took place at the same day that the Boston bombing took place. Same kind of device placed on a sidewalk, the same kind of situation in a highly trafficked community marketplace where women and children were around, and they killed 26. These were Sunnis killing the Shia. So this dateline is now Baghdad. In what appeared to be a new phase in an intensifying conflict that has raised fears of greater bloodshed and wider sectarian war, Iraqi soldiers opened fire from helicopters on Sunnis in the northern village in a northern village on Wednesday. This is last week. So the helicopters that the United States has given Iraq, which is now controlled entirely by Tehran in Iran, were used to fire openly on Sunni villages. That is our legacy. The air attacks were among the clashes throughout the country between forces of the Shiite-dominated Iraqi government, read Iranian-dominated Iraqi government, and the Sunnis. They left more than 30 people dead and scores wounded, riddled with bullets. The Sunni tribesmen were continuing a fight that began on Tuesday after the Iraqi army stormed a Sunni protest encampment in the village of Hawija, leaving dozens dead and injured. So here's the Sunnis who are protesting because they are, when we invaded Iraq, it had a secular government. That secular government was in the hands of a person whose family were Sunnis, and therefore the minority in Iraq were effectively in control, which was actually a good thing for the world because it precluded the spread of influence from the Shias in Iran. But when we invaded, the U.S. invaded Iraq, we replaced that regime with a regime that is wholly and completely controlled by Tehran. And so now the majority of Iraqis are oppressing the Shiites. Excuse me, the majority of Iraqi Shiites are oppressing the Sunnis. And we now have the spread of Iranian influence throughout the region, which is why the war is now taking place in Syria. It's a proxy war between Iran and Saudi Arabia as the two largest Shia and Sunni powers are battling it out for supremacy in the Islamic world. That's what we created. And so when the Sunnis were protesting because America didn't realize that the country would be fractured into four groups, one of which would be eliminated, the Christians. So our invasion of Iraq eliminated Christianity. They were murdered. The Kurds, which we didn't want to have a separate country, now have their own separate country unofficially in the north because they didn't want to play with the rest of them. And then you've got the Shias now oppressing the Sunnis viciously. So the Sunnis have been protesting. And so what did the Shia army that the United States equipped, what did it do? It stormed a peaceful protest with weapons and killed over a dozen peaceful protesters, injuring more. And then after the Sunni says, yeah, you can't just come in and gun us down, they brought in the helicopters, gunships, American gunships, and shot them down dead from the sky. Others were killed on Wednesday in explosions, including the detonation of a car bomb in a public market in the evening in a Shiite neighborhood in the north of Baghdad, and a roadside bomb attack on an army patrol in Tikrit. The deadliest battles occurred near the northern towns near Kirkuk, and battles are still raging at this time. The army shut off electricity to these communities, and troops shouted through loudspeakers urging the civilians to evacuate. There are only civilians. There is no Sunni army. Now, there's a Sunni militia that is divided between all the various warlords that are Sunnis in Iraq, hundreds of them, but they were armed and are paid for and provided bullets by the American government. It was part of the Awakening program.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you...